Welcome back. Let's talk to Mr. Philip Shaw, the chief economist at Investec. Philip, very good morning to you.
Morning.
Welcome to the world of Tip TV.
Thank you very much.
Now, you've given me three subjects to chat through: elections, Greece, Eurozone recovery, and your love of Chelsea Football Club. Now, I'm sure, OK, let's kick off with football. Why are you a Chelsea fan?
Oh, I was brought up in West London from very early age. They were the local team, or one of the local teams. And I suppose I'm a glory hunter in the sense that in the late 60s, Chelsea were quite a good team and won the FA Cup in 1970. But I stuck with them through good times and bad.
So you are a sort of season ticket holder. You're a fanatic, if that's the right word.
Some people would use that word.
That's
I've been a season ticket holder for a couple of decades or more.
Okay.
So yeah,
so a proper football fan.
Keen fan. Yeah, I love football generally.
Okay. Well, I might buy you half a lager in 2 weeks' time when I come down to Chelsea.
Done.
You never know. Okay, let's talk to something less interesting: the general election. Okay, we're 3 weeks away. It looks a pickle to me. Is it a pickle when you look at it, sort of, with any sort of sensible hat on?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the polls, poll by poll, they're really averaging neck and neck, Labour and the Tories. But as we've been explaining to clients, look, forget about the polls almost. It doesn't translate very well into the distribution of seats, and probably less so this time than in previous elections because of the performance or likely performance of the minor parties, with the SNP likely to do very well in Scotland, perhaps UKIP denting some of the Tory vote and similarly the Greens denting the Labour vote. If you look at the bookies' odds, if you like, the Conservatives are odds on to take the most seats. But if anything, this morning we noticed that Ed Miliband has become very slightly the favourite to become the Prime Minister after May the 7th. It's pretty marginal. I think he's 11 to 10 on. Cameron is even money. That really doesn't give you a very clear picture on, number one, who's going to be the leading party, never mind how that makeup of the government is going to take place.
Right.
Do you give any credence to the what we keep hearing about, that a lot of conservative voters don't admit they're conservative voters in the poll, and so we're not actually going to know till rather near the time? Perhaps there's some hiding around the corner.
Yes, that could well be the case, actually, and it's possible as well that you see a late swing to the Conservatives, as voters tend to be conservative with a small c, and elect for the status quo at the last minute. I mean, we really don't know. You know, another factor is that Nicola Sturgeon's been performing very, very well in the national debates. And if you look at, there's an Ashcroft poll in Scotland published over the weekend, that shows the SNP, if anything, extending their lead in some key seats over the Lib Dems and Labour. But does her slightly aggressive stance put voters off Labour in the rest of the UK on the grounds that an SNP-Labour alliance might be a likely outturn? So there are lots and lots of uncertainties here. It's very, very difficult to call.
OK, well, let's move on to another subject that's even easier to talk about, Greece. William Hill last week, we talk a book, is refusing to take any more bets, OK, on Greece leaving the Eurozone. This is just extraordinary set of situation, isn't it?
Well, we're talking about Greece, and we've had plenty of practice. We've been talking about it for about 5.5 years now. It's not disappearing as an issue. Currently, obviously, the sticking point is, can the Greek government draw up an acceptable list of reforms to international lenders to release the cash under the second bailout? And the critical point is in the timetable, of course, is when does Greece run out of cash? Now, we don't actually know that. It's unlikely that the Greek government knows precisely. A few weeks ago, everyone was talking about late April. Now the crunch date is seen as perhaps a payment to the IMF in the middle of May. So there is a little bit of time. But if we draw on that past experience of the last 5 years or so, what we know is that everything gets determined at the last minute. It's always 11th hour stuff. So, there is a chance, I guess, that Greece misses a debt payment and defaults. But one should also make the point that that's a different proposition to Greece leaving the euro entirely. So I think a lot of market observers look at those two outturns and lump them together. And of course, they are related, but they're not the same thing.
Because Greece, every time, I pick up my Sunday Times or whatever it is, okay, and everything's always Greece, Greece, Greece.
Absolutely. I mean, the irony is, if you like, that towards the end of last year, or at least the second half of last year, the Greek economy was expanding. Greek debt costs were still coming down, and it looked as though Greece could actually leave the second bailout on time at around the turn of the year. Now, of course, you've got a lack of market confidence, a lack of economic confidence. The banks are playing safety first with their balance sheets. So that's probably causing some sort of credit crunch in the Greek economy once again. The economy has done a U-turn and is now contracting again.
Right.
Why has it got such a big impact on markets, you think, given that Greece is 2% of Eurozone GDP? I mean, obviously, there's the fear of contagion, but there is a school of thought that why do we care?
Well, that's right. We certainly had to care 3 years ago because of that very contagion. You're absolutely right. And not just contagion within the Eurozone. This would have been a massive contagion throughout the risk asset world globally. And would have, you know, if Greece had left the euro at that stage, it probably would have thrown the world economy back into recession. Now it's less clear. I certainly agree that it's a safer place for either a Greek default or Greece to leave the Eurozone, but we're still not quite sure exactly what would happen. And, you know, do you really want to go there? I suspect that the European officials probably don't, and I certainly wouldn't do either in that respect.
OK, so the third topic, we're talking about the Eurozone recovery. Now, to be fair, we've had some very clever people come on Tip TV this year and said, right, this is the trade, buy Europe to sell the US. And with the DAX up 20% or whatever it is now, OK, it looks fantastic. Is that, again, too obvious?
Well, it's fantastic if you're currency hedged.
Yeah.
obviously, one of the big drivers of that trade has been the euro falling sharply. QE's been another contribution as well, in the sense that, for example, if you're a German fund manager, you know, you perhaps have a few bunts to sell. You know, what do you do with the surplus cash? Do you buy Greek bonds? Well, probably not. You might want to switch asset classes and go into equities. And indeed, we've had, as you know, a massive surge in Eurozone equity markets, partly because of that substitution effect. It's now less clear. But in terms of the economy, we are actually pretty optimistic. We think we should get somewhere a little bit in advance of 1.5% growth from the Eurozone this year. It's not great, but it's probably the best rate of growth we've had there for about 4 years or so. The surveys are pointing in an upward direction, and we know that the external sector is very important in the Eurozone because exports of goods and services account for about 45% of Eurozone GDP, and that compares with, you know, somewhere around 10 to 15% in the US.
Well, so you like Eurozone?
Well, I like it better than I did last year.
I just want to make sure we've got that on the tape.
certainly in terms of economic growth, yes, there is a recovery going on, and it's probably exceeded most market expectations. And indeed, if you look at the IMF's World Economic Outlook forecast from last week, the IMF have effectively said, sorry, we were a little bit too pessimistic on the Eurozone, and they did up their forecasts for the next couple of years. Right.
Is there a slight possibility then? I mean, it's easy to talk with hindsight, obviously, that the ECB might have actually gone a bit early, or indeed late, depending on which way you look at it, with QE, because obviously some people are saying, well, as a matter of fact, the European economy was starting to turn the corner under its own steam.
Well, it was, but arguably part of the reason there is because the euro's been weakening because of the speculation of QE. And I think it's that expectation which has been built into financial markets, which, number one, has pushed the euro down, giving the eurozone economy an external stimulus. And secondly, it's probably helped confidence as well. So I think the ECB's probably done the right thing on QE. It talked the talk for a very long time, and eventually it was forced into walking the walk. So, yeah, I don't think it's gone too early. And I think during this crisis, one of the rules of thumb is that most policymakers have erred on the side of more monetary accommodation than going the other way. And I suspect that the ECB will see this QE programme through up until September next year.
So, talking of tightening, when are the Fed going to hike up rates?
Well, it's a good question. It's been made more difficult by the run of slightly softer economic data that we've seen, particularly retail sales. We had 3 week sales numbers in a row. Now, last week's number showed a bounce back from that. You know, is it too tight to expect a June tightening? I think we're probably erring that way. I mean, the June tightening, I think, had been our central view for a couple of years. And without having made a formal change yet, we are considering September as being the most likely time to see, you know, right, rate liftoff from the FOMC. You know, we're now away from, you know, strict forward guidance towards, okay, the data will tell the story. And so we are in the lap of the gods in terms of what the economic statistics tell us. Our view is still relatively optimistic on consumer spending, on payroll gains, and therefore I think, you know, we have to be expecting a tightening by the end of the year,
right,
at least.
And very, very finally, I've read a piece, I think CMC Markets did it, that in terms of coalition governments in the UK, there's a situation whereby a 13% pullback, OK, on a very unhealthy outcome. Would you be a buyer of the FTSE or a seller, or do you think this would just be a temporary blip, a little bit of uncertainty, and the bulls will continue on to 8,000 or whatever the next level is?
Well, I'm not an equity analyst, I'm an economist, but my own personal view is that without the, if the Fed don't tighten in June, that gives markets a slightly longer run not to be nervous. I think equity markets aren't looking outrageously cheap as they were 2 or 3 years ago, but you've probably still got some value there. So I'd say short run, you may well see, you know, a rally. I don't think we're going to see 8,000 for a while, though.
Right. OK, Philip Shaw, Chief Economist, Investec, a Chelsea fan. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Top interview. Right, let's take a very, very quick break. Then we're going to come back and do, we've done a pre-record with Mr. Clive Lambert, Director of Futures Tech. He's got five global markets from a technical perspective. Then we'll be back with Ben Harrington, the business journalist at Beaterville Blogger, to talk about the latest M&A in the market. Straight back after the break. Thank you.